Okay, here we are back. Thank you very much for being here tonight. We have a lot to talk about this hour. There's many things going on. There are two raging wars going on the planet right now. Raging wars. There are other combat and military engagements going on at a lower level, but the Israeli, U.S.-Israeli, it's a two-part antagonist in this, efforts to annihilate Gaza and the West Bank. Is continuing. And remember when that absurd story came out of the White House where the U.S. allegedly was asking Israel to use, quote, smaller bombs so they wouldn't kill so many civilians in Gaza? What an asinine thing to even say. And in the meantime, we just finished shipping over 200, 2,000-pound bunker busters to our Jewish friends in that brave little democracy known as Israel. They're killing people in Gaza right now as we speak with American weapons dropped by American planes. This is a U.S.-Israel war against humanity in Gaza. And if you've seen, and I'm going to try and get the pictures together of all these Apache, there are eight or nine U.S. given to Israel Apache attack helicopters that were sent aloft during the October 7th attack, and they slaughtered hundreds of Israelis because they couldn't tell anybody apart. They were on the ground. So they just killed everybody, hundreds of their own people. And the video is so gruesome to look at, but it's there. And they kept going back to base and reloading with more ammo and returning to the killing fields, and they just unloaded. So don't buy any of this. This was all a device, as you know, to give Netanyahu and his regime the reason to allegedly attack those evil Hamas terrorists. Nobody likes terrorists. They're all evil, okay? But we got 16,000 dead now in Gaza. The entire infrastructure is destroyed in the north, and they're going to take it out in the south. So there'll be no way for 2 million people to even continue living there. They can't. They won't have any buildings. They won't have any hospitals. They won't have, that's the idea. This has been the plan from the beginning. It's all thought out. They're trying to eradicate all humanity from those two areas. And they're going to drive all the Palestinians out of the West Bank. You watch. If you don't know what the West Bank is, go look at a map and you'll see where this is going. And they're going to drive these people, as I said in the first hour tonight, either into northern Egypt, into the Sinai, across the Rafah border crossing, or they're going to drive them into the Mediterranean to drown. That's what they want. All right. Mitch Henderson is back tonight with his superb overviews of all this and analyses. Hello, Mitchell. Welcome back.
Hello. Good to be back. I'm
Yes,
glad you
indeed.
mentioned that little thing about the smaller bombs and the thinking,
Yeah.
because what I did is I looked at Albert Pike's letters that he wrote in 1884 to Mazzini, and I was like, okay, so how could he plan this? How could he? It's more of a plan than a prediction, but it is a prediction also because he's projecting a plan into the future. And how is it that he could do that? And so I dug, and I realized what it is it's that the way people think is predictable. And it doesn't matter if there's some wise people out there that really knows what's going on, because the mass of the people are always going to be in a delusional state. So I kind of want to start off by talking about what he would understand about that, and this is how he could make this prediction. Okay,
Right.
so let me start out by quoting Nicholas of Cusa. In the 15th century, he said that the intellect is a whore. It will prostitute itself to anything. You see, uncertainty is the opposite of faith. The dialectic is an ancient process based on uncertainty that searches for certainty through a dialectic method, but can never arrive at certainty. We like to think of reality as the certain truth. And through the dialectical method, we try to arrive at the truth of what is reality. What happens is that we grow weary of the argument and just want to settle on what is reality. We surrender and just make it up. And I then observed in the 20th century that, quote, we do not see the world the way it is. We see the world the way we are, which ultimately is saying the same thing as Nicholas of Cusa. Everybody is encouraged to develop a separate reality that both validates the consensus reality that our leaders impose on us and blinds us to the actual reality. I know this sounds like a Matrix thing, but slaves must be convinced that they are not slaves. Like Gavin Newsom debating Ron DeSantis, California, with a violent crime rate of 500 per 100,000, is doing much better than Florida with a violent crime rate of 250 per 100,000. California is doing better because Gavin Newsom says so. This is the consensus delusion. Worse right. means better. For the first 10,000 years of civilization, this was done by the church and state under the rubric that a few wealthy people are appointed by God to rule over the peons, and to disobey the king was to disobey God. Everything in the kingdom or the empire belonged to the king or emperor. A nobleman was made steward over certain delineated domains of the realm, and everything belonged to that nobleman's manor, including the people that lived there. However, trade and business were encouraged to enrich the king, and many merchants and tradesmen became wealthy. In 1492, Columbus went west to find gold and set up trade with the New World. Everything belonged to the king, but these explorers were given handsome commissions by the king for what they found. Every king sent forth explorers to set up trade routes, and the business class began to eclipse the noble class in importance to the king. Businessmen became far richer than the noblemen. Mercantilism was born. Mercantilism was basically a nationalist economic policy. The policy of mercantilism was made formal in 1613 by Italian businessman Antonio Serra, who published his book, A Short Treatise on the Wealth and Poverty of Nations. This also marked the beginning of the Renaissance, which was the transition from the Middle Ages to modernity. This also involved studying the Greek and Latin classics. The increase in learning heralded the Enlightenment, or Age of Reason. During this time, the Zionists began to rise because Christians were forbidden to charge interest on loans, it being called usury. However, Jews were not held to that rule, so they became the merchant bankers. This evolved into the current globalism, the pursuit of free trade and maximum finance to enrich the Zionists and put them in control of world affairs. If you control the money, you control everything that money is used for. The greatest expression of this will be the mark of the beast, where the Zionists will control every aspect of your life through central bank digital currency. So, in other words, what used to be the king, okay, the priests and the king, okay, now the Zionists have taken their place, and they shape the understanding and the reality that everybody lives in. So the dialectic method was started by the Greek philosopher Zeno in the 5th century B.C., elucidated by Socrates into the Socratic method and further developed by Plato and Aristotle. If you read these ancient Greeks' works, you will see that their philosophies are elucidated as dialogues or arguments between characters. The dialectic is a form of reasoning based upon a dialogue of arguments and counterarguments by advocating propositions, the thesis, and counterpropositions, the antithesis, leading to a synthesis. In the Middle Ages, the method of dialectical argument was formalized into a formal logic called propositional calculus, and identifying certain bogus arguments called fallacies of logic. In medieval universities, three subjects were taught: logic, rhetoric, and grammar. It was all about clear thinking and clear speaking.
I like that idea. This logic. Period was... We don't teach logic to kids. California and in Oregon, you no longer can actually hold a student accountable for being competent in reading, writing, or arithmetic. They can't be left behind. Right. So in Oregon, the high school diploma means absolutely nothing now. And in New Jersey, the teachers union has decided that new teachers coming into the union and into the school districts do not have to be competent in reading, writing, and arithmetic any longer. The teachers. This is in New Jersey.
Yes,
it's
the
a
blind
fact.
Leading the blind. They want the blind to lead the blind.
That's it.
So it was all about clear thinking and clear speaking. This period was the age of faith, but all of these arguments led to the age of reason, or the modern era. This eventually led to the intellectual exhaustion of postmodernism, where we have decided that nothing is true and there is no reason. Look at our government now. It acts exactly like that. The laziness of reason led us to the Orwellian doublethink, where we simultaneously accept two mutually contradictory thoughts as correct. Like silence is violence, diversity is our strength, gun violence. It leads us into accepting mass immigration as a good thing, although more people necessarily mean a degradation of the environment, while at the same time, the environment is the highest social value. So these two values are contradictory, but we are to believe in them both. You see, it is humans that pollute the environment. So while worshiping the God of the environment, we must flood our nation with as many people as possible and degrade that environment. This translates to those who live comfortable lives having to be impoverished to make room for the poor. In short, this only works if everyone is equally poor. This is equity. However, the environment is still trashed by the growth of the population. More humans simply mean more waste. The World Economic Forum's solution is to kill people off. You see, humans are the thesis, the environment is the antithesis, and the synthesis is the extermination of humanity. This is dialectic logic, okay? This is our world now, and this is right. The extermination of humanity to save the environment. Open borders exacerbates the problem and accelerates our extinction. It makes perfect sense to the dialectical mind. Save the planet means you must die. Global warming is the pretext under which we will be impoverished and then disposed of. Of course, the rich leaders will remain the Zionists.
Yep. Yep.
It also led us to a nightmare world of false dilemmas, which is a world of falsely limited alternatives. You have to vote Republican or Democrat, but the progression of stupidity will be the same. Either way, we insanely support the Zionists in Ukraine and Israel. This puts us squarely in the Great Tribulation because hell is the impossibility of reason. Look around you. Aren't we in hell? And no leader anywhere seems to have any reason at all. So, to understand Albert Pike, you must understand the progression of ignorance. Humanity is not progressing. Uh-huh. We are collectively decaying. Pike was not a prophet. He was a planner. He had a classical education and understood the way things were headed. His plans merely recognized the dialectical nature of humanistic learning and the secular realities that had already developed in his time. Rich people run the world and always have. Rich people would inevitably force all these conflicts on their own petty and visionless interests. To these enlightened people, the Illuminati, it will be only the rich that will inherit the earth. The god of the enlightened people is Lucifer, the light bringer. In the 1960s, Saul Alinsky even dedicated his book, Rules for Radicals, to Lucifer. His book is the playbook for the progressives and even Antifa. So, in his May 24th, 1880 letter to Mazzini, Pike described the three world wars that have followed the dialectic. So the thesis of nationalistic economic policy brought about the antithesis of fascism or national socialist policy. When democracy replaced kings in the 19th and 20th centuries, democracy created the fiction that the state is the people. That is a fiction. It is not true, and it's never been true. National socialism is an economic system where the private individuals, the rich, own the means of production, but the state, the people, controls what is produced. The synthesis is Marxism, internationalist socialism, an economic system where the state, the people, and when I say the state, it really means the Zionists, okay, owns both of the means of production and controls what will be produced. These economies shape our consciousness. Marx recognized this. Nationalistic, national socialist, and international socialist are all secular realities. These are the new theses, antitheses, and synthesis that Albert Pike wanted to accelerate. His plan was to accelerate these, this dialectic process. The three world wars of Albert Pike were all intended to radically accelerate economic and, therefore, social transformation. So just replace the word rich Zionist Jew for the state, then you will get the big picture. The Zionists basically want to own everything on earth and decide what to do with it. The national economic policy that created the modern world was capitalist. Capitalism was economic democracy because it was the consumer's money, which is votes, look at that money as votes, that determined what would be produced. Now you notice that our government is telling us that we cannot have wood burning stoves, gas stoves, and soon no gas or diesel trucks. This, in fact, is the opposite of economic democracy. It is an economic dictatorship. They're telling us what we can buy. We don't vote on what we buy anymore. They tell us what we're going to buy. Okay? So yeah, that is exactly. Not our world. There's not going to be any progress anymore because we're not in that world anymore. Our money doesn't vote to buy anything.
This is the disassembling, the devolution of a once magnificent dream of a country. It's gone. It's being taken apart.
It is gone. Okay, so let's talk about World War I.
Let me say one thing, Mitch.
Go ahead.
At the top of the homepage, at rents.com, R-E-N-S-E, if you're new, .com, I don't like big corporations. I don't like the big automakers. I don't like any big business. But for some reason, Chevrolet produced a Christmas video that it's worthy of the Norman Rockwell Prize, if there were such a thing. It is so good and beautifully produced. I put it up at the top of headlines. I hope it's still there. It should be. Let me take a quick look. It's just beautiful. It shows what Christmas used to be like to people who never lived in those times. There's some sentiment in it. It's just a really beautiful tribute. It's right there at the top. It says Chevy's gorgeous new Christmas ad may leave you crying. It's so beautiful. Thank you, Chevrolet, for reminding us all of what America once was. And it's right there at the top. So I urge all of you to go look at that and share it. It's a really a nicest thing I've seen. When you think of all the hideous, horrible, woke crap and how Christmas has been perverted, look at this. That's the spirit of Christmas right there. And it's Chevrolet did it. Who'd have thunk? But they did. Go ahead, Mitchell.
Yeah. So Albert Pike's World War I. Albert Pike's letter, he discusses World War I as an acceleration of the process of getting rid of monarchies and to create the first Marxist state, the Soviet Union. It was to be a jumpstart for atheistic Marxism. It was meant to start destroying religion. World War I saw 9 million people killed. Now, this war did not have a lot of civilian casualties. It was mostly troops on the front getting slaughtered, okay? The wars took place on every continent. It ended with the Russian Empire, the German Empire, the Austria-Hungarian Empire, and the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire was the great Islamic empire that covered North Africa and the Middle East. World War I ended that empire. The Russian Empire became the first Marxist state under the Bolsheviks. The original seven members of the Politburo were six Zionist Jews: Lenin, Trotsky, Zinoviev, Kamenev, Sokolnikov, and Bubanov. The seventh was a Georgian, Stalin. No Russian would rule Russia again until 1984, when Konstantin Chernenko was made general secretary. A year later, Mikhail Gorbachev took the job, and he was also Russian. Between Stalin and Chernenko, Malenkov was a Macedonian, Khrushchev and Brezhnev were Ukrainians, and Andropov had a Jewish mother. The Great Britain took the German colonies of Tanganyika in Southwest Africa. France took Togo and Cameroon from Germany. The United States took Samoa from Germany. China took Chow Chow and Tsing Tao from Germany. And Japan took the Northern Mariana Islands, the Marshall Islands, Caroline Islands, and the Palau Islands from Germany. After World War II, the United States would take those islands from Japan. the first world government, the League of Nations, would be established after World War I with its headquarters at Geneva, Switzerland. The official religion of Austria-Hungary was Roman Catholicism, of Russia Eastern Orthodox. And when the Ottoman Empire fell, Turkey became a secular state, and public displays of Islam in Turkey were officially banned. In other words, this was to destroy religion. World War One destroyed the old world order of national church and state and replaced it with a new world order of internationalism and introduced atheist Marxism into the old Russian Empire. So World War II would be to pit the National Socialists against the International Socialists. 53 million people died in World War II. It was to end imperialism and nationalism and political Zionism against National Socialism. National Socialism was to die along with the nationalisms in general. International Marxism was to be strengthened. Political Zionism would create a Zionist state in Israel. By the end of the war, political Zionism vanquished National Socialism and used the Holocaust to justify setting up a Zionist state in Palestine. International Marxism expanded to Poland, East Germany, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria, Yugoslavia, Albania, Mongolia, China, and North Korea. By 1980, it spread to Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, Zimbabwe, Angola, Democratic Congo, Guinea, Tanzania, and Cuba. By 1980, all British, Spanish, and Portuguese colonies gained independence. Marxist revolutions and insurgencies raged in Latin America, Africa, and Asia. Nationalism became a sin and a crime. Nationalism became unthinkable. This is why the United States cannot have a border. The West began worshiping Israel as their god. Cultural Marxism was ascendant with the sexual revolution of the 1960s, followed by the gay revolution of the 1980s with its concomitant punk rock music. Americans did not get what punk meant. Punk in America meant like hoodlums and stuff, but punk rock started in England where the word punk meant homosexual. Homosexual chic became stylish in American universities. This was to make sodomy at first tolerated, then accepted, and now a mandatory protected class. The Second World Government, the United Nations, headquartered in New York City, came into being after the Second World War, and one of its first acts was to create the Zionist State of Israel in 1948. And there was like 53 million people killed in the Second World War. Okay.
I think that's so conservative, but yeah. At least.
Yeah, it's pretty conservative. I mean, you know, that's the least, yeah. So World War III is to pit political Zionism against Islam to the point of mutual destruction. The current news is rife with warnings that Israel can and will lose this war. Many say this war will destroy the nation of Israel. From a military point of view, I would have to agree. Israel's sodomite army does not have any moral force. They do not have a large enough army to defend themselves. Israel is losing the war in world opinion. The World Economic Forum wants World War III to kill 7.5 billion people. What makes Pike's plan that Israel will lose this war clear is that Israel complains that George Soros, of all people, is supporting the Palestinian opposition. So the Jews of the world are not united on Israel's side, okay? Israel is attempting to incrementally step up its war of genocide to not provoke the Arab nations. What is keeping the Muslim nations from invading now is, in fact, the moral force issue. You see, Israel has no right to defend itself from an occupied people. It is clear and unambiguous to the non-Western world that Israel is committing war crimes and crimes against humanity. Even in the brainwashed West, there are massive protests against Israel's genocide in Palestine. The Muslim nations want those protests to grow into a crescendo before the attack, so that Western nations will become reluctant to come to Israel's aid. They will probably wait until it is crystal clear to the world that Israel is ethnically cleansing both the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. In fact, Israel is not important to any nation on earth because it just simply is not important for any reason. Israel is not even really an important interest to the United States. Just ask yourself what they can possibly do for us, or for anybody else for that matter. Israel, since 1948, has been an American destabilization operation conducted against the Middle East. The Third World War will end with an important peace treaty in the Middle East. It makes sense because the only obstacle to peace in the Middle East is the existence of Israel. This war will get really bad, and when it reaches critical mass, and the Antichrist must step in to save the day. That is why the New World Government will be headquartered in Jerusalem. It is likely to be declared an international city. The polarization leading up to World War III will involve all nations of the world with the purpose of destroying cultural, moral, and economic framework of the world. Out of this chaos, a new world order will take form. The Third World Government, that led by the Antichrist, will be formed after the war, and it will be headquartered in Jerusalem. Uh-huh. Okay, so I'm just going to hazard a guess here. Okay, uh-huh. I would hazard a guess that the Third World War will last from October 7th, 2023, until April 7th, 2027. The Antichrist World Government will last from then until
2027. All right. So I'm sure we got that right. Yeah.
It's going to build up. Making it on purpose. It's just creeping up.
It's incremental all the way. You bet.
Right. It's boiling the frog, you know. You put the frog in the cold water and you boil it. He doesn't know it's happening. That's what they're doing to us. They're bringing this disaster upon the earth, and they're doing it incrementally like that. So most of us will just not be paying attention. So the Antichrist World Government will last from then until October 7th, 2030. Starting from October this year, things will get more horrible until the false Christ brings world peace 3.5 years later. The last 3.5 years will be the Antichrist making war on humanity. It will be nature revolting against the Antichrist that will bring natural disasters, famine, plagues, and complete social and economic disintegration upon humanity. Okay, but once this is over, it'll be a liberation of humanity. We'll be done with these people. We'll be done. Zionism will no longer be in control of anything. Don't know what's going to be there when it's all said and done, but it won't be them in charge anymore. And they have brought hell on humanity.
Zero, it will
be a relief.
Mitch, 0.0025% of the world population. That's it.
Yes.
Run the planet.
They run the whole planet. And they have an agenda, and they're patient. They're patient. They know that they can just slowly, just creep up on it. They've been doing it all my life. You know, I can look back and see that they've been doing it all the time. We complain about DEI now. I was just looking on YouTube at an episode of NYPD Blues from, I think it was back in the 1980s, and they had an episode where they had a lesbian female police lieutenant that came in, and she was just hell on everybody else, and nobody could get rid of her because she was both a female and a lesbian, so she was a protected class. So this is 1980. They're talking about this. Okay.
Yeah.
So this
and
is
look where it is now.
So it's overt now. Yes.
It's just blasting it everywhere. They're blasting it. They're reconfiguring our society. They're destroying children. The war on children and childhood was the final perversion of it all. It's awful. It's just beyond belief to do that to kids.
Well, they talk about the abomination of desolation. Okay, and if you look at other scripture, I mean, the worst thing you can do is to victimize a child. Okay, that is the worst thing. Christ talked about that. And one of the things, an issue that they repeatedly say over and over again in the Old Testament is to not put your children into the fire. God doesn't want you putting your children through the fire. So what is that? That was Moloch back then. They'd sacrifice kids to Moloch because you sacrifice the most valuable thing you have in order to get nature to do something, which that's not actually how it works, okay? But look at them now. I mean, 70 million babies plus murdered in the United States from abortion. And you know, let's be genuine here. When you kill a fetus, you're killing a human being. It's life, and you're snuffing it. Period. It's murder. It is nothing else. Okay. I mean, you know,
facts are facts.
This
is ridiculous. Yeah. We even have to say this kind of thing. It's a fact. It's simple.
Oh, I know. You know, I was in a sociology class in college many years ago, actually, and. And one of the things I wanted to do is I didn't want the professors to ask me questions about these controversial topics because, you know, they want a certain answer, and I didn't want to give them that answer, okay, because that's indoctrination. And so the professor asked me, they said, well, it was a female professor. She said, well, how much, well, at what point should we say that a person can abort their child? Because she's advocating that even after they're born, you should be able to, a certain amount of time, you should be able to go ahead and just snuff them. Okay, so I said, well, I think you should be able to abort your children until they're 18 years old, because when they're a little baby, you don't know how they are. But by the time they're 18, you know how they're going to be. So, you know, just you and your wife go in, sign a document to the doctor, and you abort them and stuff. And she was like, oh, no, that'd be murder. You see the faulty thinking there? Thinking is that when you're justifying by what you're doing by putting it into a time frame of some sort. And that time frame is actually arbitrary. It's always arbitrary. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's either born, it's either life at the moment it's conceived, or what difference does it make after that? It's disingenuous. Okay, so but this is what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, the intellect is a whore. It will prostitute itself to anything. This was an observation that this guy made in the 15th century. Okay, and it's so true. You see them prostituting their minds to every stupid, insane thing you can think of. And the rest of us have to sit here and put up with this nonsense, you know? It's like they actually expect us to believe it. When the crime rate in California is double that in Florida, and Gavin Newsom gives up there and says, "Oh no, we've brought our crime rate way down. There's not much crime in California." When we all watch the news and see that there certainly is grotesque crime, out of control, rampant crime. Mm-hmm. Okay, but he just says that it's not, and we're supposed to believe him. You know, Bidenomics, it's making us all wealthier and better off. And we're supposed to believe that. They say it all the time. A certain amount of people do believe it. But, you know, how can you believe that when you go to the store and everything costs 2 to 3 times more than it did just a few years ago?
I mean, and the containers are getting smaller, too, in addition to that. They're actually making smaller tin cans now, I've seen. They're about 20% smaller.
Hilarious. Oh, yeah, everything is. Well, I saw this with candy bars when I was a kid. You get a full-size candy bar for a nickel, and that's what you would get.
Well, that was a whole meal, a Baby Ruth bar for a nickel? Yeah, it was a meal.
Yeah. And then they shrunk, the size shrunk, and the price just went up and up and up, you know?
And they added more and more chemicals to the ingredients on the label, and it just... Now it's a ghost of what it was, a toxic ghost of what it was. You don't eat those things anymore. They're just awful, awful.
Well, the poisoning of humanity is intentional. It's not some mistake.
Okay? No, of course.
It's planned and intentional. Okay. I mean, listen. How are they going to charge $250,000 for a cancer treatment if nothing gives you cancer?
Oh, they've got cancer on the loose now. Oh, yeah. No problem.
Yeah. After all the money that people put into looking for the cure, it's not about finding the cure.
They crushed Royal Raymond Rife and then Brzezinski, Stanislaw Brzezinski after that. So many people have come up with essential cures for most all cancers, and they've just been crushed. That should tell you everything you need to know. There's no money in curing cancer for these bastards. There's a lot of money in treating it, tons of money in treating it. That's where the big profit is. So why do they want to make people better? They don't.
It's going to take their money. Not about making you
more
better.
More tests, more therapies.
Even the psychiatry is supposed to, you know, if you look at it, if you go to the chiropractor, he's getting you hooked on his treatment. If you go to the psychiatrist, they're getting you hooked on the treatment. Okay? That's what therapy is. Therapy is not meant to, oh, yeah, we'll fix you up in a few sessions, we'll get you straightened out and then set you on the road.
Correct.
That's how come they sit there and they ask you these questions and then they say, Actually, they don't really have an answer for you, you know, and anything. They're just letting you talk and charge you big money for that. Okay. It's all a scam, and if you look at the we're talking about wars all over the world. Do you realize there's wars here in this hemisphere? Venezuela has decided that they're going to take half of Guyana.
Right.
And this is actually an old border dispute, okay, from colonial times and stuff. But Venezuela also has border disputes with Brazil and Colombia. But Brazil and Colombia have big militaries. Listen, the military of Guyana cannot even keep order in Guyana. Guyana is a nation it's just basically a failed state. You're unsafe there. You'll be robbed. In the middle of the day downtown, the people just rob you, and there's nobody there to stop them from doing that. Okay,
this
is the way Guyana has been for decades. Okay.
Right.
So they can't.
What are your
defend
thoughts
themselves?
About this, briefly, Mitch? You've been down there enough.
Yeah.
Venezuela takes half of Guyana. Obviously, there must be some oil there somewhere, or natural resources.
Yeah, there's
a reason
oil there.
For this. There you go.
Right.
So, will they get it all the way to the ocean?
There.
Are they going to split it that way so they have a port, or are they going to just take the inside, the inland half? What are they after?
Well, no, what it is they'll take the western half of Guyana. That's what they've always claimed, the western half.
Okay.
And that's the oil-rich half, okay?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So they want to take it. They started talking about this, and they said, well, we'll take it to the International Court of, you know, claims and stuff. But they say, oh, yeah, we're not going to listen to you. So just this past weekend, Venezuela had a vote where they had the people of Venezuela vote whether they wanted to take half of Guyana or not. And by popular acclaim, the people say, yeah, let's go take it. Okay. But, you know, that's like any vote. The outcome is according to the people who are running the vote. Then it's not what necessarily anybody votes for. So, if they ever hold a fair election on anything, it'll be over an issue that's just totally unimportant. Okay. If it doesn't matter, they'll leave it up to the voters. Okay. If they don't care about it, they'll leave it up to the voters. But I have no confidence that Venezuela has free and fair elections. I mean, the United States of America doesn't have free and fair elections.
No.
Why would Venezuela?
When there's money involved, free and fair is one of the first casualties. Forget it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Totally good.
That's like safe and effective. All right. It's the same idea.
Oh yeah, sure. So it's like, and Guyana Guyana is not actually a Latin American country per se. It's more a Caribbean country because the people there, about half of the people are black people, and the other half of the people are like from India. Well, you know, dark Indian people, Southern Indians and stuff. So, and they speak English. They do not speak Spanish. Or anything, okay? So they definitely have their own particular identity, you know. They're a racial group, and they speak a certain language, okay? But once again, I mean, listen, I don't want to harp on this too much, but But, you know, it's like once again, Haiti became independent in 1803, and there's still a slum. Liberia in 1847, there's still a slum. Ethiopia's always been a sun country, and there's still a slum. So the thing is, you know, the truth is, we probably should not judge them and their culture based on our own. But under that same rubric, it's foolish to have them live amongst us because their culture is just not the same as ours. It doesn't have the same values that we have.
You know, there's just no assimilation that I can remember working in terms of introducing a minority culture into a majority culture. It doesn't work that way. The minority simply sticks together more vigorously and begins to set up their own little community here and there. They do not want to integrate and lose their identity. So the only time that's ever worked is when Europe came to the New World and built America and succeeded. That's when the amalgamation of peoples of different cultures really worked.
But they were European cultures.
That's right. White, Christian, European.
For example, Asian people, the Asian people are no slouches. They can excel in our culture. They're intelligent. They're very hardworking. There's many, 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 many good attributes to Asians. And Asians, you know, the Asian tigers, they can really build up a strong economy in a modern world. I mean, when I went to Japan in 1972, it's like every stairwell was an escalator, every cab door opened automatically. You know, everything was mechanized and modern and advanced, and we didn't have the little pocket calculators yet, but Japan did have them. I mean, they had a lot of these things before we did. So technologically, they're very advanced, and they are very hardworking people. I mean, I spent 4 years in Asia, and they work their butts off. They're hardworking people. But they still do not assimilate here in America. You know, they most of the part they stay in their own communities and stuff, and they don't necessarily like to hang out with, you know, the other peoples and stuff that are here. So they tend to be insular. Okay, so it's just the bottom line on this all is you know, when we look at the story of the Tower of Babel, what is it telling us? It's telling us that, you know, God made all these different people. Not so that we could erase those differences. That's a satanic and antichrist thing, to erase the differences between people. God made those differences because he wanted those differences, okay? And we should respect those differences, okay? So, you know, we're just, you know, everything we do, if you look at everything we do in our society, everything we do in our politics, in our sociology, in our culture, everything we do is a slap in God's face. It's just trying to give God the middle finger on every single aspect. Like he wants women and men to be together, so we push LGBT stuff. Okay, you know, it's like I don't know if you saw this, but there's a major cardinal. He's an old cardinal. He's a big guy, a very powerful guy. He was in the Vatican. He was one of the principal cardinals and stuff. And the Pope just fired him because he will not support LGBT in the Catholic Church.
That's the anti-pope. That's a fraud pope, Bergoglio.
Yes, he's
totally pro LGBTQ, yes. And he's pro-globalist, he's totally pro-New World Order. He's controlled. He's just another mouthpiece
for the controllers.
He's going
to Dubai to the world climate thing. Climate change
is
faithlessness, okay? God created the universe, and humans are acting like, oh, well, God's not going to take care of the universe. God's not even going to take care of the earth. God's too incompetent to take care of the earth. God's too incompetent to clean up our mess. He's been cleaning up our mess for 10,000 years, okay? And, You know, it's like I have never, I mean, I've got a bachelor's and master's in geography. I've studied climatology and stuff. I loved it. I was very interested in it. And it's a hard sell to me. I look at their statistics. I look at what they report. And, well, it's bullshit is what it is. It's 100% bullshit. And but, see, most people do not understand climatology. They don't understand all about this. So what they do is they just accept the authorities, what the authorities say. It's authoritarianism. They accept what some authorities say, some experts say.
Right.
Okay, but these experts are not really experts. I mean, 97% of the people who are climatologists and do research, they don't buy into global warming. And it's funny, only 3% profess global warming. Okay, 3% of climatologists, but they're the ones who the people with the money, they're the ones who decide who gets published and who gets their papers in the press and who gets their speeches and everything in the press. Okay, so while 97% of climatologists think that global warming is bullshit. Okay. 97% of the people of the world think that it's true, but they're not climatologists. So they're just going along with what's popular is what's going on.
I studied climatology and geography in upper division at the university. That was my thing too.
And did you ever see, I mean, you know, like I said, when I was in graduate school, we looked at these global warming people and environmentalists like they were wacko tin-hat conspiracy theorists, and now they're running science.
Correct.
You know, listen, when I went to the bookstore the other day, I saw an article in Scientific American's trash now. It's just propaganda trash. They had these two female anthropologists that said, oh, actually, it was females that went out and hunted the animals.
Oh, please.
And the men did the gathering.
And are they saying that they were lesbian females at that yet? They will if they haven't.
Oh, probably. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe Kathleen Kennedy was the one who put them up to it because, you know, she wants a lesbian female to be in every act in every position and be the important people in everything, okay?
Right.
So, you know, this is what we have now. We have this pushed. I mean, I just, you know, do we have to, you know, the fact is we do have to look at that all the time. There was a series on TV that me and my son liked. It was called Justified because it took place, it was hillbilly stuff. It took place in Harlan County, Kentucky, okay? And that's where my family comes from, up there in eastern Kentucky in the mountains. And so the new Justified came out, and we decided, oh, I'll pick up the DVD, you know, because we do it. Well, the very first episode, you know, they're trying to make his love interest be this black woman, you know. It's like, why? Why? Why is that necessary to do that, you know? It's just... you know, they're just not gonna do it. And the truth is, when you look at TV, you look at newscasters, reporters. Well, you know, most of them are people of color now. You know, there's just a few white people left reading the news.
If you look at commercial TV, Mitch, you'll come away with the absolutely irrevocable feeling that, geez, 80% of America must be African American. Has to be.
Oh yeah, you would. You know?
And the rest of it is
and
some other minority.
I know exactly what you're talking
Asians,
about.
Whatever.
Because when I traveled to Latin America and stuff, actually one of the things I enjoyed doing is watching the TV because they had the pretty Latin women reading the news and being the reporters.
Well,
the weather girls
are quite a scene. Some of them.
Oh yeah. Gorgeous, right? So if they came to America, they get the impression that almost everybody in America was a black person. You know,
it's true.
It's just it's just messed
up. Was it 13%? You know? Something like that. It's small. I feel
13%. It's been stable at 13%. Right. I mean, you know, they're not gonna let that change. They're being sold short on immigration too, because, you know, if we didn't have immigration, out of necessity, black people would have more jobs and better jobs. Okay, because see, immigration is tied to labor. When you bring these people in, and these are mostly Latin American, Islamic black people and stuff that are coming in, people from India. Okay, they're taking those jobs that if we didn't have immigration, that the black people would have had. So the people getting screwed by immigration, the people getting screwed the most are the black people, and they vote for it.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So
Well, look what's happening now, though, with younger inner city blacks. They are so far removed now from the general game of social evolution. They're going back and up in the trees. These flash mob riots and burglaries and stuff.
This is
the antithesis of civilization and civilized behavior.
Right.
They're out of it. They're never going to make anything of their lives. Nothing. Anyhow, crazy stuff. Mitch, thank you very much.
Yes,
that was another outstanding rundown. And Bishop Pike seems to have known. I don't know how. I guess he was told, but it's everything's fitting into place for sure.
Well, listen, next week I'm going to try to go into this dialectic a little bit more. And I want to show everybody the dialectic from the beginning so they can see how this whole thing is planned out. Okay.
Excellent.
And figure it all out and stuff. I'm going to try to make it simple and clear so it'll be Marxism critical theory. Okay.
Very good.
We'll let you know all about that.
Great. Thanks, Mitch. Take care.
Okay. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All righty. Mitchell Henderson. And you can find Mitch's programs up on the left-hand side of the homepage there anytime you want. So take a look. All right, back with more tomorrow night in 21 hours. Talk to you then.